This is Metal Mike, and in this episode, I'm joined by my special guest, Rob Wild from Midnight City. He gets us up to speed on the new Midnight City album that's coming out later this year. And then, together, we talk through some of the best overlooked tunes, man, our favorite 10 hair metal deep tracks. You gotta check this out. Well, Rob, welcome back to the 80s Glam Metalcast, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to talk again.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it's great to be back on your show, mate. Thanks for having me back.
You got it, man. Well, we know there's been some things cooking up with Midnight City. I heard you guys are working on a new album. Tell everybody what you got going on.
Yeah, we're currently working on our fourth album, and we're quite a long way through it. I'd say we're about 80% done. Which is great. I mean, we've been working on it since about October, November last year, and I'd say we're probably about 80% musically done. I started tracking vocals last week, so I'm cracking through with them at the minute. And the plan is to actually have the album, fingers crossed, the album finished musically and vocally by the end of this month, and then we mix in February. Hand it into the label in March, and the album's going to be coming out in June. So we're really looking forward to that. We got a UK tour booked over here in June to coincide with the release, and we got some festivals out in Europe, and we're working on some stuff elsewhere in different countries as well. So it's great, mate. We're just really busy, you know, cracking on getting this, because we have to have a kind of a deadline to meet so we can get the album out in June. So it's obviously I'm a little bit biased, but it's sounding damn good. That's all I will say.
Awesome, man. I know you guys have put out a lot of great music since you started. Would this any different direction, or are you guys kind of just sticking to the same music that you're known for?
I think, you know what? I think it's kind of gone back a little bit closer to what we were doing on the first two albums. Because the last album we did was kind of a little bit heavier, a little bit darker in places maybe, and I think this one's going back to kind of like that, just like good fun, you know, great, you know, catchy melodic pop metal stuff, you know, which is kind of what we're known for. So it's definitely kind of suddenly kind of on the lines of our second album, I think. There Goes the Neighborhood. There's some couple of really big ballads on there, and some great, just great tunes, you know. And obviously, like I say, I am a little bit biased, but you're gonna dig it, Mike. That's all good.
It sounded good, man. You got an album title you can reveal or not yet? You got to keep that quiet.
You know what? We're still working on that. I've got a couple of ideas in the works, but nothing definite yet. But we're going to have to come up with something pretty quick, because, like I said, we're getting on with we got the photo shoot for the album coming up in a few weeks' time. So we're going to have to come up with a title pretty quick, really. But I've got some ideas, and I'm sure the rest of the guys have some ideas as well. We'll be announcing all that, you know, on our social media and all that kind of stuff. But just cracking on with all that. And like I said, just having loads of stuff kind of in the works for the rest of this year and into next year. So always busy.
Another thing we could talk about briefly is Tiger Tales. They came out with a new track. They redid Six Sex, and you're not on it, man. You're not in the band anymore. Anything you want to say? Anything you want to say about Tiger Tales?
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting one. I left the band in May of last year. It was a strange one because I said at the time, you know, I'm not a believer in kind of airing your dirty laundry in public and all that kind of stuff. So kind of like what goes on behind the scenes is, I guess, what goes on behind closed doors stays behind closed doors and all that kind of stuff. The one thing I will say, though, is that I left the band. I wasn't fired. They're kind of making out that I was fired, and I wasn't. To be honest with you, it's something that I've been thinking about doing for quite a while before. So it wasn't just kind of like a quick decision. I've been thinking about it for about a year prior to leaving the band. And it's a strange one because, you know, I mean, I love playing the band, I love singing the songs, I love doing the shows, but all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes, which I won't go into, but it was all that kind of stuff that I couldn't deal with anymore, to be honest with you. So I was kind of like happy to just kind of get out of it. But you know what? I mean, I was in the band for 10 years. I was in the band for a long time, put a lot of effort and a lot of work into that band. And I mean, if you Wikipedia if you go on Wikipedia and look for Tiger Tales, I mean, obviously they've gone through a hell of a lot of band members, but I was actually one of like the longest running band members.
Wow.
Longest serving band members for like 10 years. So, it was time for me to go. It was just as simple as that. And no regrets there. It was good while it lasted. I'm moving on.
Yeah, sounds good. Have you heard from Stevie James at all? It was out in the press that he had a stroke. I messaged him. And I said, you know, I'm praying for you. I hope you're doing okay. He sent me back a thumbs up, but I encourage everybody, you know, send up some prayers, some positive thoughts for him because, and I'm sure he's going to be fine, man. He's a fighter.
Yeah, he's going to be great. Yeah, I was lucky enough to go down to his show in London a few weeks ago. He did the Young and Crazy show. I'm sure you heard all about that. And so I went down to see him, and I hadn't actually seen him. And we got talking before the show, and I hadn't actually seen him in about 13 years. I think it was 2009, the last time we saw each other, which was when I was playing in his band. I was playing guitar for him at the time. And we kind of, over the years, we kind of, when I joined Tiger Tales, we kind of like lost touch with each other, but we recently got back in touch and we've been talking a lot, you know, and we've been getting on great, and we had a great time in London. He was great, he was awesome. He played the Young and Crazy album from start to finish, and I spent a lot of time with him that night, you know, catching up on what we've both been up to for the past 13 years, and we've even talked about, you know, possibly doing something together, you know, me and him writing some stuff together and maybe doing something at some point as like a little side project thing. And then, yeah, I heard the news. It was just before Christmas. He had the stroke. So I spoke to him and, you know, he's recuperating. You know, he's taking it easy. He's taking it slow. But I'm sure, you know, the one thing Stevie is he's definitely a fighter, you know what I mean? So he won't let this beat him. So I said, look, you know, once you're back on your feet and you're feeling better, then we'll, you know, let's get together and see what happens. So that'll be great. That'll be cool if that comes off, which I'm sure it will, because Stevie's well up for writing some stuff, and we'll see what happens with that. So, yeah, but, he's battling through, and he's
going to
be just fine.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, tonight, last time you came on, we did, I think we did 80s Kiss album ranking, right? Non-makeup Kiss album ranking. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And I went back and I listened to that one. I think when the new year hit, I kind of got nostalgic, man. I went back and I started to listen to some of the old episodes. And that was a great episode. And I think it's time for us to do another great list. And we're going to talk about deep tracks. So we're going to talk about our top 10 favorite hair metal deep tracks. And deep tracks is a term that gets thrown around a lot, you know, and basically it's associated with a band's, you know, songs that are kind of rare and maybe not played as much, forgotten. And I think the whole concept is that they don't have to be, but they tend to kind of appear late in the album. That's where they get the name deep track. So I think for a lot of us, these are the tracks we all like the most anyways. You know, how do you feel about the deep tracks?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, they're always the best tracks on the, because I guess as well, like a lot of I think after time you get sick of hearing the big singles,
yep.
The really obvious songs, which get played, especially if it's a big band, they get played everywhere. So it's always, like you say, the deep tracks are the ones that, I mean, they're certainly always my favourite songs on all of my favourite albums. So, it sounds like we both got the same opinion on that, Mike.
Definitely. Well, we made up a couple rules. We said no repeat bands because honestly, with some of them, you could probably do a whole deep track list of one band and you'd be done, you know. So we'll try to break it up.
That sounds good.
Well, why don't you kick us off? Let's hear what your number 10 favorite deep track is.
Right. Well, I've got my top 10, but I would say in terms of the top 10, these are just they're not particularly in any order. I just love all these songs, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like they're not necessarily in favorite order. But coming in at number 10. One of the bigger bands, and I'm gonna go with Without Love by Bon Jovi. Ooh. From the Slippery When Wet album, which is a huge album for me back in the day when I was a little kid, alongside Europe. I think we discussed this before when I was on the show last time. Alongside Europe, it was the band that kind of really got me into rock music when I was a 9-year-old kid. You know, from prior to that, I was a big Duran Duran fan, and then kind of discovered Europe, and literally around the same time, within a month of hearing The Final Countdown and buying that album, I heard Bon Jovi for the first time and fell in love with that album. But this song is my favourite song off Slippery. I think, again, like we were saying about the tracks that are overplayed and, as good as Living on a Prayer and You Give Love a Bad Name are, if I never hear those songs again, because yep. You just hear them too much, you know what I mean? So this track, I just think it's great. I mean, obviously, it's a Desmond Child co-write, like all the best songs are. And it's, I just think it's a really, really great, great pop rock song. And to me, was always a standout track on this album. I absolutely love it. I think it's great. So that's my number 10, Without Love.
Excellent pick, man. I like that song too, and I kind of forgot about that one. And there's definitely, I think there are some songs that get overlooked on this because the songs that are big, they're just so big and so in your face. But yeah, man, that's a great pick, Without Love.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I agree. So you got a 10.
Well, man, I think I told you, I messaged you during last week. I was like, this is tough. You know, I kept kicking songs off. I thought I had my 10, and then something would come to me, and songs were getting kicked off. But for my number 10, okay, this is a band that's not really known for playing hair metal. But for this album, they went complete hair metal. This was kind of the year when hair metal just started to peak, right? And it's Judas Priest, man, with Reckless off of Turbo. You know that song?
I do, yeah. That is a kind of like a deep cut for sure.
Yeah, I think it's the last track that's on Turbo. I just love this song. You know, I think with that album, there's a few songs on there that are just not really, you know, what Priest fans are used to. And just Reckless is total hair metal, man. It's catchy. It's fun. It reminds me of something that could be like in an 80s movie or something. You know what I mean? Or maybe it would play as an 80s movie trailed off. But it just got great melodies and it's just a fun track. So I got Priest Reckless, man, as my 10.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's the only album I'm really a fan of, to be honest with you, because like you said, you know, it is quite hair metal, isn't it, throughout?
Yep.
So that's a good one, mate. Yeah, very cool.
Number 9.
Right, number 9. Okay, so I'm going. Helen Guns and Over the Edge.
Oh yeah.
So that's obviously the opening track of Hollywood Vampires, and I was always a big LA Guns fan. I thought they were great. My actual favorite LA Guns album is the first album, mm-hmm. which is total sleaze. You know, like the sleaziest album that they did, and then Cocked and Loaded was a little bit more hair metal, I think. I loved Cocked and Loaded as well. And I remember at the time not liking Hollywood Vampires as much because it was kind of a little bit of a they kind of toned down the kind of the hair metal stuff on that album. But as the years have gone by, that album's grown on me a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But regardless of that, even when I first bought Hollywood Vampires, you know, I loved Over the Edge, the opening track on the album. I just thought it was amazing. And obviously it brings back memories of watching Point Blank, classic film from 1991. I just think it's just such a great song. I love the whole, the kind of the lyrical kind of concept of it as well. And, you know, kind of that, you know, a lot of it's written about, you know, them being in Japan and obviously being to Japan myself, like a lot of the stuff that's kind of translated in the lyrics is really cool. I think it's quite cleverly written lyrically, recorded great. And Phil Lewis just sounds, he's just great.
Yes.
He's still great. He's one of those guys that's still just as good now as he was back then, which is kind of like a rare thing, but I just think he sounds great on this track. And, I love this song. I think it's one of the best. So, I've got Over the Edge at number 9.
That's a great one. And, this is an album that actually we did a podcast where this album came up as somebody's letdown, you know, because Cocked and Loaded was so good that, that my co-host on there, A Fish, he thought this was a letdown. And I kind of felt that way a little bit when it first came out, but I'm like you, this album grew on me over the years. This song, of course, I think everybody really appreciates this song, even though it wasn't a single, it wasn't a big hit or anything. People really dig this track. It's just so like, I don't know, it's just kind of epic sounding. You know what I mean? It's a little bit slower, where LA Guns usually kind of kick you in the face with something like, you know, Show No Mercy or something. But this is coming in a little bit more classier and a little bit more epic. And that's a great track. Great track. Great album, too. I go back and listen to that album all the time. And I really dig the scaled down, you know, thing they were going for. But it was still catchy, still memorable songs.
Yeah, I'm the same. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but now I really do, because there was a lot more, definitely a lot more sort of, and that's the thing with hair metal, as we both know, you know, we both love it and love what it stands for, but, some of it's a little bit shallow in places, and I think this track and this album, like I said, there's a lot more depth to it.
Yeah.
I think it really, it kind of showed a different side to LA Guns, and like you say, I think class is like a really good word of describing this song. So,
cool.
So yeah, if anybody's not checked it out, they're gonna go and check this track out. So, what you got, number 9?
Okay, so number 9. Let me tell just a quick story. I went into there's like a small music shop. You don't find many music shops anymore, but I went into the small music shop and I was just kind of looking around at their UCDs, and I found this band's debut. And it's Winger, their Winger debut, okay? And I popped this into that. I still have a car that has a CD player, and I was jamming on this for, you know, a couple weeks, and so many songs were kind of coming back to me like, wow. I mean, not that I hadn't heard them in a while, but it was just to listen to the album as a whole for a couple weeks. I'm like, man, this is a great album, and a lot of good deep tracks. Once again, Winger, you could say this kind of, not as big as Bon Jovi, but this album had some real big singles. Headed for a Heartbreak, 17, Madeleine, Hungry. There was four big singles off this album. But one of the songs that's really stood out to me, kind of listening to it with older ears, is State of Emergency. There's just something about this song. It's just got, you know, great melodies. Also, once again, kind of like, you know, classy pop metal. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, where sometimes, like you talked about, like LA Guns did the sleazy stuff. Like, Winger's not sleazy, but it's kind of like more classier. You know what I mean? It's more thought out. It's calculated almost. And one thing that kind of came to mind to me, Rob, I interviewed Bo Hill a few years back. And I asked him, I go, if you had to create a super group with all the guys that you produced, now come on, he's produced some guys, right? Warren, Rat, you know, all of them. And he's like, oh, you want me to create a super group out of all the people I've worked with? He goes, just give me all the guys in Winger. And he thought those were the most solid people he'd ever played with. And when you really sit back now with older ears, you listen to that debut album, he's right, man. Like these guys are really solid in every position. So great musicianship, great song. I went with State of Emergency.
Oh man, that's the best song on the album. By a long way. Yeah, I loved the first two Winger albums, and then the third one. That was kind of when they were getting a little bit more serious. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as well as the kind of the fun side of Winger and the 17s and all that kind of stuff, they had some hidden depth in what they were doing, even on those first two albums. And then Paul came along, and it kind of got a little bit too serious for me. Mm-hmm. But those first two albums are great. And I definitely agree with you. That's my favorite song of the first album is State of Emergency. Yeah, so nice. That's a really good choice, Mike.
All right. Right. Good, man. I'm glad you like it. Number eight.
All right, so number eight, I'm going with a little bit of curveball. I'm going to do something a little bit more obscure.
Well, let me talk about Lillian X for a minute, because everybody knows who listens to my podcast knows that I'm one of my favorite bands. I didn't put them on any of my lists just because I feel like almost all their songs are deep tracks, right? You know what I mean? Nobody, you know, the average person doesn't know Lillian X. But man, you know, you're right on. You were spot on with everything you said. True Believer, great song. And they are just very unique band, you know, like some people just don't get it, right? Like you could play Lillian X for them, they just don't get it. But for those of us that get it, the voice of Ron Taylor, such a unique, interesting, awesome voice, the guitar playing and the chord changes and the harmonies and everything that him and Steve Blaze do is just magic. So I'm with you. But I, like I said, I won't get into it much more because everybody knows I love Lillian X. So, all right. So my number eight, I went, like I said, I tried to go with a lot of my big bands, maybe songs that people forgot about a little bit deeper into the albums. And this one is not really a glammy song, but it's off a glammy album. going with Lightning Strikes Again by Dokken off of Under Lock and Key. This is a monster of a song, man. It's got a super heavy-ass riff. I don't know if this was like a leftover from Tooth and Nail, but this is really, really heavy. And this vocally is Don Dokken in his prime. I mean, his voice is just on fire here. And I love that song, man. It's catchy. It's fast. It's fun. So, Lightning Strikes Again.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've got to admit, I was never a massive Dokken fan, but that is a great song. I had a friend when I lived in the States who was a massive Dokken fan, so we listened to that album quite a lot when it came out. So, yeah, that's a good one. Good choice, man.
Nice.
How about number seven?
So number seven. It's the way. And Sign of the Times.
Great.
Out of This World. Great. Which is, to me, will always be the best Europe album. I it was the first band, first rock band I got into when I was a kid with the Final Countdown, the album before that. But this one, to me, just still stands out as the kind of defining moment. And it's kind of a weird thing. I was listening actually to one of your shows recently, and you were kind of going through, maybe last week or the week before, you were going through your kind of requests and things that you would like to happen this
year.
And I remember one of you mentioned about the Europe thing, and I totally agree. I was a massive Europe fan, and I loved all their 80s stuff, even the early stuff, Wings of Tomorrow, yep, was cool. Yep. Even though I was kind of a little bit more European sounding, and then The Final Countdown and Next World, and then Prisoners in Paradise was a good album. And then when they reformed and came back out, I was really excited when I heard that Europe's reforming, and then they came out and it was just like a completely different, I was like, what the hell is this?
Right.
It's like a completely different band.
Yep.
It was all kind of Deep Purple crap, and the synths are all gone, it's all Hammond organ and it's all bluesy, and I have no interest in it whatsoever. And I actually went to see them a few years ago over here. Actually, they were playing here in Nottingham, and I think, headlining show, and I think they out of 15 songs, I think they played maybe 3 songs in the 80s.
Oh.
So I was sorely disappointed. But this one was a big, I think a lot of it is to do with, apart from the fact that it's just a great freaking album, it was also, my first concert, my first ever show was going to see Europe on this tour. And obviously this song was played live, and it's just, I just love this song. It's just an amazing song. It's a story. That's my number seven. If only they would, like you were saying on your last, if only they would come out and, do something like this again, I'd be a lot happier. Get Bo Hill back.
Yeah, it's funny. It's so funny that I'm so glad you picked this song, because there was two songs. I end up Europe got booted off. I don't know what happened, but the two songs that I was wrestling with was this and Just the Beginning. Though I was torn. I wanted to put one of those on there, but I didn't. But I'm glad that you did.
Yeah, Just the Beginning is good as well. That's a good track.
Yeah, and I'm with you. My favorite, I don't know, I get torn between Out of This World and Prisoners in Paradise, but I think pound for pound, track for track, Out of This World is a better album. Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I think so. Prisoners was good as well. I like that album. I thought there's some great songs on that. To me, it's Out of This World all the way for me.
I'm so with you.
What have you got for number seven then?
Okay, so this is an album, comes up a lot on my show, comes up a lot on any hair metal list. I got Back Home Again, man, by Cinderella off of Night Songs. I mean, Night Songs is like grade A hair metal, right? And I dig this track. It's the last song on the album. It's heavy. It's really cool though. I think like the verses are just have a really catchy melody, and then there's a cool pre-chorus, and then I'm back, back home again. You know, it's just all around good. It's just his voice is so cool. And like I said, they were a little heavier than what they look like, but I still think, you know, that look, the purple logo, the sound, everything was working, man. So, yeah, number seven, Back Home Again.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Those first two albums were great. Again, they're one of those bands that they kind of got to album three, Heartbreak Station, and I was kind of,
yeah.
I kind of checked out a little bit at that point, but those first two albums are... They were great. They were really cool. Yep. Such a good band. So that's a good choice. So for number six. I'm going with Trickster and Nobody's a Hero The Hero album.
Nice, nice.
Which is I love Trickster. I thought they were great. You know, they got a lot of, you know, crap ripped out of them back in the day. But I mean, I thought they were great. You know, I mean, that first album is just such a fun album. Just great fun. You know, almost kind of like they were almost kind of like a young Bon Jovi. Mm-hmm. I always thought, you know, they had that kind of, obviously they were from New Jersey, but they had that kind of, almost like a baby Bon Jovi, and I think that's kind of how they were sort of marketed as well, alongside the kind of almost like the New Kids, but, you know, like the rock version.
Yes, they were.
But I thought that first album was great, but then the leap between the first album and the second album was just insane. You know, it was 2 years between the two, but, you know, it was almost like, you know, you can kind of hear the youthfulness in the first album. You can kind of like pick up on the fact that they were kind of teenagers, you know, and it had that kind of vibe about it. But, you know, you go from that album to 2 years later, it's just a completely different band. I mean, the player on the album's great, the production's great. Pete Lauren's voice on the Hero album is just insane. I mean, if you listen to like songs like Rocking Horse and Damn Good, I mean, his voice is right up there with the, you know, Sebastian Bach of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, there's some insane notes on that album, and he's such a good singer throughout that whole album. And again, it's just one of those bands that, you know, with a lot of these bands, you know, they were just a little bit too late. I mean, you still had the kind of the gold album from, you know, the first album, but, you know, I think if they kind of come out 2 or 3 years earlier, you know, with the first album in, say, like, even in 88 and then the follow-up in 1990, I think they probably would have been, you know, as big as Warrant and bands like that, you know, but unfortunately the timing, I mean, when the Hero album came out, they were right on tour with Kiss, and then they on the Revenge tour, and then they just got dropped from MCA, and nobody was playing their video for Road of a Thousand Dreams, and it was kind of game over for them. But but I love this album. This Trickster would still be the Hero album would probably still be in my top 10 albums, and I know, like, I still have people make fun of me for that, but I think people that make fun people that haven't actually properly sat down and listened to it. I think people just think, oh, Trickster's those kids and blah blah blah, but, you know, I'd see it's surprising actually, because over the years I kind of, you know, put maybe a track on off this album, like Rocking Horse or something, and so many of my friends will be like, who is this amazing, and I'm like, oh, it's Trickster. And then, oh, yeah, I don't really like it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, it's got one of those things, you know, but I love this album, and to me, this Nobody's a Hero was the standout on the album for me.
Well, I don't think I've ever given this album a fair shake. I'm going to be honest. But I like that you put it on. I know you love this album. I've seen some of your posts. I know you're a big fan of this album. So I'm glad you put this song on. And in defense of Trickster, I did have a Trickster song that I was kicking around but didn't make my final list. Was Play Rough off the debut.
Ah, cool. Yeah. Well, yeah, you've got to give this album, you've got to give the Here album another spin and let me know what you think.
Because, I will.
Yeah, I think you're missing out on a really, really good album.
And it's funny that you say that.
You got to number six.
One other thing, though, quick. Funny you say that because I just put out that episode that focused on what was going on with some careers in 1991, and Steve Brown was one of the clips in there, and you had mentioned that people wouldn't play that video, and that was kind of like the end for them because they came up with their first video off of Here. What was it called again? What's the song?
Road of a Thousand Dreams, yeah.
Okay.
Single,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So they got the news that MTV wasn't going to play it, and they were like, "Wow, this is it!" Like they kind of knew they had no shot at success with this album. So it's sad. It's sad what happened to them, you know.
You imagine how like frustrating that must have been, and how heartbreaking that must have been for them, though, because they got their first, you know, they're a bunch of like 19, 20 year old kids. They put out their first album. They've got a gold album. They're on tour with the Scorpions. They're doing, you know, the Blood, Sweat and Beers tour.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
They get this huge budget to do their second album. And I'm sure they came out thinking, this is it, we're going to sell 2 million albums and yep. blah, blah, blah. And then literally it was all over. You know,
crazy.
That must have been, to have the kind of the taste of that success and then just have it taken away from you so quickly must have been pretty hard to take, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would say so. All right, man. So number six. All right, so let me first start with the album that the song is off of. And I've always been huge into this album, and I feel like I'm getting bigger into this album all the time. But
I'm after you. Can you hear me calling? Baby, quit your stalling. It's you. You what I'm after. I'm gonna get to you anyway. You what I'm after.
It's Reach for the Sky by Rat, okay? I'm really into this album. I feel like this is like a forgotten album in their catalog because all anyone ever talks about is Out of the Cellar or Invasion of Your Privacy. But I really love this album. And for some reason, the last couple songs have really caught my attention, especially over the course of this year. Or, well, this year has been kind of short. Let's say the course of last year. And the song that I want to talk about or want to put on there is What I'm After. I just think it's a great song, man. It's just fun. Once again, catchy. It's got all the elements that you're looking for. It's got a pretty cool pre-chorus, and Percy's voice is awesome. So I don't know, man. I'm a big fan of that album, and I think it ends really nice. You know, I felt like Rat sometimes, a lot of these bands, not just Rat, would kind of put throwaways at the end of their albums. You know what I mean? But I don't think that's the case with this one.
Yeah.
You know, they've got like the Bottom Line and What's It Gonna Be, and then What I'm After. So any one of them could have been on my list, but I love that album, and I think it ends real strong.
Yeah, that's, you know what's really funny is, no word of a lie, this is kind of weird, it's some weird synchronicity thing going on here, but I've actually been listening to that album a lot recently as well, I swear to God.
Good!
And it's one of those things, sometimes, you know, when you go back and you just get, you sort of in the mood for listening to a certain band, and you listen to that band for quite a while, and of all the Rat stuff, I was a huge Rat fan, but that was always, if I'm honest, that was always the album that I would skip more often than not. And now I would say that's the album I listen to the most.
See?
To be honest
yep.
with you. It's kind of weird because I always really liked Dancing Undercover, but then I listened to that quite a lot recently, and the first side is great, side one, you know, and then side two is pretty weak. Whereas,
yeah.
You know, Reach for the Sky, there's some good songs, you know, like What's It Gonna Be? I mean, that should have been.
Yeah.
Crying out to be a single, right?
Yep.
That was like a big hit. It should have been a big hit for him.
Should have been.
It's a melodic. Almost like you can hear, like, it's almost like Desmond Child could have written that song, you know?
Yep.
So, that's a good choice, mate. And like I said, I've been listening to that album a lot as well. So I think it's a really underrated album, that one.
Yep. I'm with you, man. Glad to hear it. Number five.
Right, number five.
I've seen in a solitary day.
Dog Eat Dog. Yeah. So Q's Warrant fan, obviously, that goes without saying. And that's Dog Eat Dog's my my favourite Warrant album. So you know, the third album where they kind of got, I wouldn't say they got too serious, but you know, it's kind of classed as the album where they got, you know, they weren't as hair metal, but I mean, there's still tons of hair metal on the album. There's still Machine Gun and Bonfire, and there's some, there's just a couple of songs where they kind of got a little bit, you know, more, a little bit more serious, a little bit more, less hair metal-y, I guess you could say. But that album, I mean, it's just from start to finish, it's such an incredible album. But that one, that song, has always been the standout track for me. It's so melodic. It was kind of like as melodic as kind of Warrant got, and to me, that's just like the ultimate kind of Janie Lane song for me. So All My Bridges Are Burning is my number five.
That's great, man. I love Dog Eat Dog. Great pick. I always thought that was a standout track too. So great pick.
Yeah. So what you got?
All right. So number five. I Got Desperately by Slaughter. You like that one?
I was never a big Slaughter fan, to be honest with you, but was that off the first album?
Yeah, it's off the first album. Yep.
They were kind of one of those bands that they were, for me, it was I could just never get over his voice.
Yeah.
His voice used to drive me insane.
Yep.
So I was never, it's one of the very few hair metal bands that I never really got into. So tell me why. So obviously you. So this is from the first album.
This is from the first album. So I know what you're saying. A lot of people feel the same way. I think for me, I was really into the All Systems Go Vinnie Vincent album. So when Slaughter came out, I'm like, yeah, you know, more of this stuff. And I think Slaughter took it to a next level. Obviously, higher level than Vinnie Vincent. Better songs, better production. You know, the whole thing was working, and they had a really big album. The cool thing about Desperately, though, it's kind of become bigger over the years because it actually gets played on Hair Nation, which is kind of weird. It wasn't a single, and this album was kind of plagued with a lot of the other ones that we talked about. I mean, I think there's four or five videos off of this album, so it was a very big album. So this track kind of got lost in the shuffle, but me personally, I think it's real catchy. It's got a cool vibe. It's probably the best song on the album for me. So, see, man, we lost our streak. We were right on sync with the Rat, and now here it is.
I remember the Slaughter album was a big. I remember it being a big album. You know, when it came out in for you guys in the States. It was just a voice thing I couldn't get over. And then, my this is an insane story, but my ex-wife is actually now married to Mark Slaughter. Seriously, man, I'm 100% God's honest truth. You know, I used to live in the States, and it was kind of a dodgy thing because, I mean, it's just like a little funny side note, but we're going years out. I mean, I moved out to the States in like 2007. I got married in 2008, and it was by 2010 it was over, and I was back here in the UK. But whilst we were in the process of separating, Mark Slaughter would I think they'd met years before or something. I don't know what was going on, but he would regularly call the house. And I would answer the phone, and it's always kind of a little bit awkward. And she's married. She's been married to him for quite a long time. So, but I hasten to add that that's not why I don't like Slaughter. I didn't like Slaughter when I was a kid, so nothing to do.
Oh my God!
There at all. So anyway, but there's a little kind of funny little side note for you, mate.
Dude, that's great, man. That is totally cool. Did not know that. So number four, we're getting down to the wire. What's your number four?
So tell me why
amazing track in here. I'm going forward. So Tell Me Why.
Ooh, yeah.
Off Swallows Live, one of the four studio tracks they recorded as the kind of the added songs on the end of the album. And to me, I mean, you know what a huge Poison fan I am. I just always loved them. But I always loved them with CC, you know.
Yep.
The Native Tongue thing, I could never really get on board with that. And to me, this was like the last really good Poison song, because, you know, Native Tongue followed, which I wasn't really into, and then there was the Crack a Smile album, which was, I was okay, it was a little bit better, I wasn't really into that, and then they reunited with CC, and I was so happy about that, and then they released Holly Reid, which was just absolutely awful.
Yep.
But to me, this was kind of, again, like one of the earlier songs I mentioned, I think this is kind of as melodic rock as Poison got. Just such a big chorus, great melody, great hook. I think CC had a lot to do with writing this song, and it's one of my favorite Poison songs. So I had to get a Poison one in. So that's my number four, Mike.
Great pick. We did a podcast a few weeks back where we did big, happy, catchy commercial songs or something like that, and I put So Tell Me Why on that list because I'm with you. I love that song, and it is one of those. It was a single, but nobody remembers it. It was put out during the grunge era, so it's really a forgotten track, but a great track. One of their best.
Yeah, I remember the video of it, because I think at that point CC had been fired, and the video is just like Brett kind of holding the guitar, kind of walking down the street, and they've just kind of, there's just shots of previous videos streamed onto the walls. So
there's
actually no actual band members in it apart from Brett.
Yep, it's
so
weird.
So you kind of like, even then, I remember seeing it as a kid thinking, that looks kind of a little bit dodgy. Like, why is Brett the only guy in the actual video? And then it wasn't long after that, in early 92, when you kind of found out that, you know, CC had been fired, and that was it. So, that was a good one. So what have you got for your number four, Mike?
Number four, man, I gotta go with my favorite band, Kiss. I gotta go Trial by Fire off the Asylum album. And I love this song. This is such a missed opportunity as a single. Don't get me wrong, Asylum had, you know, three great singles, I think, with Paul singing them. But man, one more single would have been perfect. This was a great Gene song. I think Gene redeemed himself on Asylum. We talked about this already. We don't have to go too, right? We talked about this when we did the 80s Kiss thing. But Animalize was a weak offering for Gene. Maybe kind of weak for Kiss in general. And this was, I think, a good comeback. Just very rebellious, fun, catchy. So, yeah. Try by Fire.
Yeah, that was. I agree. You know, Gene was kind of like back on board for Asylum, I thought. I like all the Gene songs on Asylum.
Yep.
But then I also like all of Gene's songs apart from No, No, No off Crazy Nights as well. I think he had some good songs. It's almost like he kind of came back on board with Kiss at that point. Even though which was strange because he was definitely in 85 and 86 and 87 still doing his dodgy movies and stuff.
Yep.
But he, I don't know, maybe he seemed to be a little bit more focused on actually doing some more work with Kiss at that point. But yeah, that's a good song. A great album as well. I loved Asylum. But like I said, we discussed that in depth, didn't we, a while ago?
We did.
So. Yeah.
But you know, with the songs, maybe he just hired better co-writers.
Yeah, that's probably what he was. He probably said, you know what, I need some freaking help. You know, let me find out who I can write some better tunes with. But it definitely worked, you know, because even you know, the other songs on Asylum, Gene's songs are great. So, and like I said, a lot better than Animalize, because every Animalize Gene song was just absolutely awful.
Yep.
I remember, like, Lonely as a Hunter, I think it was just like, what a piece of shit.
Murder in High Heels, that's what I hate the most, because it's such a lazy chorus, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That was that was Gene definitely phoning it in at that point, I think.
All right, man. Number three.
All right, so I'm just having a look down my list, and I was thinking yesterday when I came up with this list, I've got to get a ballad in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a big ballad guy, and write a lot of ballads in Midnight City, obviously, as well. And so I was trying to rack my brains, and there's so many. I mean, the hair metal thing is just, there's so many ballads to pick from, but I went with another big favorite band of mine, White Lion.
You're all I need beside me, girl. You're all I need to turn.
And it's a song called You're All I Need, which came off my favorite White Lion album, Main Attraction. And the reason I picked this one is I just think it's just like one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life. It's just, and that's the whole thing with ballads is, you have to mean it. You have to mean what you're saying. And I think there's a lot of great ballads from that whole hair metal scene. But at the same time, I think there was a lot of ballads where, record labels were clearly telling bands, okay, yep, you've got to write, we need a ballad, and they kind of like force write a ballad. And not mentioning any names, but there's certain ballads where you can kind of hear that it's not really sincere. It's not really, they're just trying to do it because they just put it on the album because the record label wanted a ballad. But this song was just kind of, I just believe everything that Mike Tramp is singing in this song. I think Mike Tramp sounds incredible on this song.
Mm-hmm.
The guitar work on this, the guitar solo is probably like one of the best. It's really simple, but it's just so melodic, and so it's just beautiful. It's such a good song, and another really, really, really underrated album that kind of fell prey to, when it was released in 1991, because it pretty much did nothing after, after having, Pride and Big Game, two big albums, and all the big tours that they got on, and then suddenly it was kind of, a couple of club tours, and it was kind of over for them. But yeah, this song is, as far as ballads go, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better hair metal ballad than You're All I Need.
That's a great song. It's a great album. This album was kind of plagued, like you said, being out in 1991. They only did two videos, Love Don't Come Easy, and then the remake of Broken Heart. And there were so many other cool tracks that could have came out, as videos. And I think if we were back in 1990 or 1989, You're All I Need definitely would have been a single and would have been a big hit. But it was just different times. But I love Main Attraction. I love that album.
Yeah, I mean, they were such a great band. And yeah, I mean, if you look at kind of they were one of those bands that they got lucky with the booking agent. They got on some huge tours. They got on the Kiss tour, and then the AC/DC tour, then the Aerosmith tour, then the Aussie tour, and then I think they did a Cinderella tour. Every big arena tour they got on, and they were kind of, their momentum was picking up and picking up and picking up. A little bit like kind of Trickster, when they released Main Attraction, I'm sure the guys in White Lion were thinking this is gonna be the one that's gonna send us over the edge, and then it just didn't, and then they're kind of, like I said, just back to playing clubs and stuff. But yeah, great. And Mike still sounds amazing. I did a tour opening up for Mike Tramp a couple of years ago, an acoustic tour, and he's just, doing obviously a completely different thing, but he still does a lot of these songs. He still plays a lot of stuff off, even off Main Attraction, and he still sounds great. Still sounds great, Mike.
Awesome. Well, number three. I got some Warrant myself. I think Warrant has a lot of great deep tracks. And I went with Mr. Rainmaker off of Cherry Pie. And, I was torn, man. I almost went with In the Sticks off the debut, but I ended up with Mr. Rainmaker. How was Mr. Rainmaker not a single? You know what I mean? Like, it screams single to me. You know what I mean? I don't know, but...
Yes.
It's so good. And the weird thing is, Rob, I don't really care for the Cherry Pie album. I think that the debut and Dog Eat Dog are both way better than Cherry Pie. I think in a lot of ways, you know, they took a lot of label encouragement. You know, like Cherry Pie was really orchestrated by the record label. They told them to write something like Love in the Elevator. And it's pretty juvenile. You know what I mean? It's definitely a step backwards. It was probably fun. It was okay for 1990. But when you go back and listen to it, it's kind of a step backwards for these guys. And then when you listen to stuff like Rainmaker and Uncle Tom's Cabin, this is the forward thinking stuff. Like, you know, they're kind of evolving as a band. They're getting a little bit more heavier, but then still keeping the melody and everything. So I just think it shows great songwriting growth and great vocals by Janie Lane. What a underrated performer, you know? Oh, awesome.
Yeah, just all around, yeah. I mean, songwriter and as a singer as well. I mean, his voice was just phenomenal, you know, around his time, especially on the, I think it was a Blood, Sweat and Beers tour, which was 91, if I'm not mistaken. And he's just ripping it.
Mm-hmm. He sounds great.
On that tour, he's just, like I said, I mean, he's up there with, you know, with the Paul Stanleys and Sebastian Bachs of the world. I mean, just so much, just an amazing range, but so much power as well.
Yep.
And he was just, he really was one of the best. And yeah, I guess he kind of, yeah, the whole Cherry Pie thing, he kind of, I don't know, you know, he was asked to write that type of song, like you said, and he did it, and I guess he kind of regretted it, you know, onwards, really, because he was such a great songwriter, and I guess he kind of got, you know, that song was a bit of a joke song, and it kind of maybe hurt his career a little bit, but, you know. But it still sold, I think Cherry Pie album sold 2 or 3 million copies, so I think he had the last laugh.
So. I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure his bank balance wasn't complaining.
Nope, exactly. All right, man, number two.
Right, number two, I'm going for another big favorite band of mine, Danger Danger. And I'm going for a track off Screw It, and it's going to be Don't Blame It on Love, which, again, for me, is the standout track on the album. Danger Danger, huge influence for me, especially on my songwriting and stuff like that. So if anybody's listening to this and haven't checked out Midnight City, it's quite funny because, you know, like I said earlier, we're working on our fourth album. And I don't think, and this is a God's honest truth, I don't think there's been a single either album review or live review that hasn't mentioned Danger Danger. it's funny, like every single review, Danger Danger gets mentioned because there's so much kind of Danger Danger in what we do. And it's just because, you know, we're all big fans, but, you know, me as a songwriter, you know, I'm so influenced by those first three albums, Screw It being my favorite album. And to me, you know, Danger Danger are one of those bands that I think were the ultimate, like, if someone came down from Mars and said to me, okay, describe what hair metal is and describe what it sounds like and describe what it looks like, I would Metal Edge magazine with Danger Danger all smiling and grinning with the blonde hair and, you know, looking cool, and I would probably put on the Screw It album, you know, because to me it sums up that music in a nutshell. I think they're one of the few bands that, I mean, there's a lot of bands that they just deserve to be bigger, but I think in that genre of music, you know, they had everything. You know, they had great songs, good, fun, catchy songs, incredible guitar player, an amazing singer. They all look cool. Even the keyboard player looked cool. You know,
that's rare.
You know, they ticked every single box, you know, in terms of, like, how a hair metal band should look. I found, you know, the album, the type of albums they wrote and put out, even down to, you know, the posters in Metal Edge magazine, you know, it was all just classic, you know, hair metal 101, and Yeah, I do. They're one of those bands that I think certainly deserve to, you know, to have been as big as bands like, you know, Warrant, you know, who were a much, much bigger band, you know, and yeah, they didn't really, I think their first album, it depends if you kind of look at on Wikipedia and stuff, it's the first album is stated that it went gold, but I remember talking to Bruno Ravel a few years ago, and he said that it definitely didn't go gold, so, and then, you know, Screw It came along, 91, and it kind of didn't really do anything, although they were quite successful over here for a while in the UK, they had a couple of, like, minor hits over here, but yeah, that's my number two is Don't Blame It on Love.
Nice, man. I know you're a big fan of
Screw It. Screw It was a hard one for me because I feel like I definitely enjoyed and had the debut, but then by the time 91 rolled around, I definitely didn't go grunge, but I might have went a little bit heavier with some of the stuff I was listening to, and I kind of miss Screw It. And then when I go back, and sometimes if you didn't catch it the first time around, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's hard to get into it the second time. But man, after this, I'm going to go back. I'm going to give Screw It another chance, and I'm going to give Here another chance, all right? I promise.
Yeah, this is your two kind of homework assignments.
That's my homework assignment. It's okay.
Get back to me and let me know what you think.
I will. Okay, so number two. Good times, bad times. I gotta go with some Poison, and I went with "Life Loves a Tragedy." This is a great song. It's kind of buried, right? It's like right toward the end of Flesh and Blood. And once again, Flesh and Blood, as we talked about a lot of albums on this list, had some real big hits and a lot of singles and videos. You know what I mean? I think this was another one that was like four or five videos. So real big album, but and maybe a lot of fans didn't make it all the way through to the album to catch the end. But if they didn't, they really missed out on this song. It starts off kind of bluesy, right? With just the, you know, kind of bluesy riffing with Brett singing and you're not really sure where it's going. And then it picks up to pretty much, you know, typical Poison fare, but a little bit lyrically, there's some more depth there. And it's just so catchy. And it really, I think this and So Tell Me Why really gave me hope for where, like, Poison was going. And then, you know, then the whole grunge thing happened and things didn't really go the way we thought they would. But that's a great one. If people aren't familiar with it, go back and listen.
Yeah, I agree. That's, again, we're agreeing on a lot of stuff here. That's my favorite song off Flesh and Blood as well.
Yeah.
Such a great song. And as you know, as a side thing over here in the UK, I have a Poison tribute band called Poison, but with a Z instead of the S. And we go out all over the UK. We're actually doing... last year we kind of copied what was going on in the States. So we went out, we teamed up with a Motley Crue tribute band and a Def Leppard tribute band. So it was, you know, like the stadium tour, which has been happening in the States, which of course will never come to the UK. So we've been touring it all over the UK and selling out shows and stuff. And we do, you know, for the most part, we do roughly about an hour long set. And, you know, it's the classics, you know, we don't do anything beyond Flesh and Blood, but it's, you know, it's all the hits, you know, Nothing But Good Time, Tall Dirty, Unskinny Bop, all that kind of stuff. But every now and then we will throw in kind of like an obscure track, and we have actually been playing Life Loves a Tragedy every now and then.
Nice.
So, it's great, you know, at that point most people go for a piss because they don't recognize the song. but we got a kick out of it anyway, so there you go. But that's a great song, mate. Yeah, good choice.
Awesome. All right, man, I gotta hear it. What's your number one?
All right, well, there's one band that's been off the list up to now, which obviously has got to go in there. I've got a Kiss song, and I think I could kind of guess the album. As soon as you said Kiss, I knew it was going to be a song off Asylum, and you know it's going to be a song.
Crazy Nights?
Crazy Nights, so. I'm going to go with I'll Fight Hell to Hold You, which was track two off Crazy Nights, and to me, what a song. I can't say enough good things about this song. I mean, a lot of people, especially diehard Kiss fans, you know, I know they don't like this album very much, but I'm a diehard Kiss fan, and it happened since I was 10 years old. But I love this album, as you know. Obviously, as a kid, backtracked and got into all the 70s stuff as well. But Crazy Nights is still my number two favourite Kiss album. And but one thing with this album, you know, I think that a lot of people miss out on is, I think, yeah, it is very poppy, and there's a lot of really poppy songs on the album, like Turn on the Night and My Way and Reason to Live, which are all songs that I loved, by the way. But there are some tougher songs on the album as well, you know, and this is one of them. And this is, Paul Stanley is absolute peak vocally. I mean, his voice is insane on this, but there's so much kind of almost like, it's almost like such a chest beating Paul Stanley song. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's so much conviction in his vocals, and actually musically, it's actually quite a cleverly written song. There's some really cool chord changes in it, especially on the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
So it's quite a clever song, you know, because it kicks off, it changes a lot. It's not just like your standard kind of straight ahead rock song, you know. There's some really clever changes. I'm pretty sure Bruce Kulick co-wrote this, I think. I'm pretty sure he had some involvement with it. I'm not sure. It actually might have been Adam Mitchell. I can't remember who he was, but it's definitely a co-write. But I just love this song. I think this is just a real kick-ass song of Crazy Nights, and yeah, that's my number one, mate. So awesome. As you know, there's no list is going to be complete without having Kiss on there for either of us, right? So.
Awesome, man. I know you're a big Crazy Nights guy, and you know, I'm a huge Kiss fan, and yeah, I got mixed feelings on Crazy Nights, but I think that's a good pick.
So what you got on number one?
All right, this one's going to, this is probably going to throw people off. They're going to be like, what the hell is this guy thinking? But one of the first metal bands I got into, man, when I was a kid was Motley Crue, right? And Motley Crue, even though they've got a lot of big singles, they've got a lot of cool deep tracks, and I'm going to go to their most glam album ever, Theater of Pain. It's a divisive album, right? Not everybody loves Theater of Pain, but that was the first Crue album I ever bought, and I love it. And I'm going to go with the track Save Our Souls. And once again, people might be like, what? Where? Why is he picking this song? I've always thought this song was cool. It starts off with monster drumming by Tommy. The whole thing has got a cool beat. It's kind of like a slow heavy, you know, it's a little bit like a slower heavy type track. And darker, maybe even harkens back to maybe something they could have done on Shout at the Devil. Maybe it's left over from Shout at the Devil. I don't really know. Mick has got a lot of the slide guitar on it. And Vince just sounds nasty on this one. He sounds good. And yeah, man, I'm going with Save Our Souls. I've always liked that song for some reason. Don't know why. Caught my ear when I was a kid. Still love it. So, Save Our Souls.
Yeah, it's funny. That's actually my favorite Motley album as well, Theater of Pain, which is kind of weird because that's kind of, again, like you said, I think that's, if you ask most people what their favorite Motley or their least favorite Motley Crue album, it's usually Theater of Pain. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some great songs on that. My favorite song off that album is Louder Than Hell, such a great song, you know. And but to me, that's still that's without a doubt their best album. So I prefer that album over like Dr. Feelgood and everything else. So there you go.
Awesome, brother. Well, hey, this was fun. I was glad to hear some of the picks. It was nice when we matched up on a lot of them. And like I said, we're real close in age, and we're really close in the music that we like. So, yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, it was, mate. Yeah, we had a lot of similar choices on there as well. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Good catching up with you. I wish you lots of luck with everything you're doing this year with Midnight City. And I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, thanks for having me on your show, Mike.
Well, that was great talking with Rob. Make sure you follow Midnight City on social media to keep up with all the action this year. Rock on!